All right, make sure you're in fellowship as we now get back into the text. Anybody remember what book was in? Genesis 20. We reviewed the doctrine of reversionism to show the differentiation between, contextually, Lot, who is a believer reversionist. He left this world sin unto death. And Abraham, who is getting ready to engage in sin and life a second time, similar to the first, yet he is not a reversionist. He is positive, and he is the recipient of all the blessings of the Abrahamic covenant in this respect. So, chapter 20 here, we have, as I stated, a similar situation as previous when Abraham bolted to Egypt during a famine. He pawned his wife off, Sarah, as being his sister. Not completely a lie, but deceptive otherwise. And again, we see Sarah ending up in another harem here of one king named Abimelech. So we titled verses 1 and 2 here as Sarah ends up in another harem. Looking at the Hebrew here. Now Abraham journeyed from there. Now, this is after the Lot episode of Sodom and Gomorrah. Abraham journeyed from there toward the land of the Negev. Yeah, the wow consecutive. Our verb to journey here is a Kalim perfect third masculine singular, Nasa. N-A-S-A. Setting out, journey. From there, you have the preposition men, followed with the adverb sham, S-H. S-H-A-M. Abraham, transliterated. Toward the land of the Negev, you have the noun, common feminine singular construct, a word translated land, earth, sometimes ground, Eretz, E-R-E-T-S. Negev points the direction south, N-E-G-E-B, proper noun, and settled between Kadesh, that'd be Kadesh Barnea, and Shur. Then he sojourned in Gerar. Wow, consecutive. Our verb to settled is the Cal imperfect third masculine singular, Yashav, Y-A-S-H-A-B, settled or dwelt. Between Kadesh and Shur, you had the preposition Bayin, E-A-Y-I-N. Kadesh is a proper noun, Kadesh, Q-A-D-E-S-H. It literally means set apart or sacred. Wow conjunction, by and repeated, between Shur, between Kadesh and between Shur in the Hebrew, proper noun, S-H-U-R. Literally that word means wall. Then he sojourned in Gerar is wow consecutive. Our verb to sojourn is the Cal imperfect third masculine singular Gur, G-U-R. In, preposition bet, then our proper noun gerar, G-E-R-A-R, literally means a wait. Verse 2, and Abraham said of Sarah his wife, she is my sister. Now the author expects us to fill in the blanks here, otherwise this is somewhat cryptic. Wow consecutive. Fall with a Bird to Say, Cal and Perfect Third Masculine Singer, Amar, A-M-A-R, Abraham, of Sarah, his wife. You have the preposition L, E-L, Sarah, his wife, is the common feminine singular construct with the third masculine singular suffix, Ishisha. Quit that. I-S-H-S-H-A-H. His wife, literally in the Hebrew, my sister is she. You have the common feminine singular construct with the first common singular suffix or word for sister, Akoth, A-C-H-O-T-H, followed with the pronoun, third feminine singular, he, H-I-Y. So Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. So it gets right to the nitty-gritty of this situation. You have the wow consecutive. And then you have the verb, first of all, to send. Cal and perfect third masculine singular, shalach. S-H-A-L-A-C-H. And he sent this person being Abimelech, proper noun, A-B. I, Y, M, E, L, E, K, Melech, meaning king, literally father is king, Av, father, A, B, the king of Gerar. He was the sovereign of this particular area. Our common masculine singular construct, noun for word for king is Melech, M, E, L, E, K, Gerar, transliterated. And he took Sarah, that being Abimelech, a Cal and perfect third masculine singular, our verb to take, lakach, L-A-C-A-C-H. Sign of direct object, proper noun, Sarah. Rereading the two verses. Now Abraham journeyed from there toward the land of the Negev, and settled between Kadesh and between Shur. Then he sojourned in Gerar. Verse 2, and Abraham said of Sarah his wife, she is my sister. So Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. All right, the analysis of verses 1 and 2. 1, after witnessing God's destruction of the Jordanian Valley, specifically the five cities surrounding, five cities associated with Sodom and Gomorrah, then being two of the five cities, in 1928, Abraham decides here for a change in scenery for himself. So we left the scenario, God's come in, he wiped out Sodom and Gomorrah in the Jordanian Valley, the plain, leaving for all posterity as a reminder of the Dead Sea in regards to God's attitude towards homosexuality. And Lot does his thing. And now Abraham, he does not have a permanent home. He is a sojourner. The area of geography that is God's will for him in sojourning is Canaan. And so he packs up his tent, takes all of his belongings, his cattle, his ranch, his help, his servants, etc., and decides he's going to relocate, which he is free to do. So, too, that he journeyed from there toward the land of the Negev, then the phrase, then he sojourned, is reminiscent then of a parallel incident that we saw back in 12. Chapter 12, verses 9 and 10, there, based on a famine that occurred in the land of Canaan after he first arrived there under God's directive will or geographical will to go to this land. And Abraham journeyed on after he got there, continued toward the Negev. He seemed interested in this particular area. Obviously, you got to understand the land, the terrain, the environment was different back then than what we see today as just being nothing but desert land. Obviously, it was able to support a very vast ranch in regards that Abraham owned. He had a very big ranch in that regards of cattle, livestock, etc. And but during that time, there was a famine that was going on. And that's verse 10. Now, there was a famine in the land, so Abraham went down to Egypt. So here we have the Negev is mentioned. Here he goes on down and he crosses over the border of Canaan to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land. So as we saw in the first parallel incident, Abraham, rather than faith resting that God would provide for him otherwise, leaves, if you will, God's geographical will. And he goes off into Egypt to seek his fortune there in regards to food and things of this nature, what he might be able to do to offset the famine. So three, and the passages here employ the same two verbs. First one, journeyed, or set out, nasa in the Hebrew. And then our verb, sojourn, gur. So the language here draws a parallel with intentions of same in regards to looking at what we're going to deal with here now in chapter 20 versus the first incident when Abraham went into Egypt with his wife. So for on the previous occasion, as we have pointed out, Abraham went well over the border of Canaan into Egypt. That was verse 10 of chapter 12, which made that very obvious. Five, now on this occasion, he, Abraham, remains in God's geographical will along the southern border of Canaan between Kadesh Barnea and Shur, and then taking his side trip north to Gerar. Here he goes up to, if you will, the limits of border. But he did not go over the line from Canaan. He remains in that particular geographical region that God set him in, which is part of God's geographical will. God has will. His will is known as his sovereignty. What he wants us to think, say, and do is known as his directive will. What he permits us to do, allows us to do, even in regards to evil, is known as his permissive will. But God also has geographical will. And part of the covenant expectations and of what the promise is based on is that he would go to the land that God would show him, which that land is Canaan. So he picks up roots, if you will, which would be quite an endeavor with the large corporation of which he owned as his ranching, etc., would imply. And he moves lock, stock, and barrel, first and foremost, into this particular area in Canaan, which would run along the border of Egypt, but not into Egypt. And then, after he gets there, he takes his wife Sarah, and he's going to do, as we would say, a day trip, a side trip. And this trip takes him up into Gerar, which is the area of the Philistines, which would put him fairly close to the Mediterranean Sea, a little further north of where he was at. So six, that he remains geographically oriented here at least implies a spiritual advance from the preceding incident recognizing the importance to adhere to the basic tenets of covenant. The covenant in part is conditional, then it becomes unconditional. The condition is, number one, orient to my geographical will for you. Then you got to separate from your relatives, which is Lot. That took a little while. Once that occurred, then the covenant transitions into an unconditional covenant. Nothing else is expected. Everything in regard to the covenant is to be fulfilled ipso facto. And he was told to go forth from your country, which was the land of the Chaldeans, in Ur, and from your relatives, and from your father's house. He had trouble separating from his father also. To the land which I will show you, that being Canaan. And I will make you a great nation, I will bless you and make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing. These blessings will come upon him in his obedience to God, in his directive geographical will. And then compare 13, 14 through 18, looking back, harking back, after God kills his dad because he wouldn't separate from him. And God has ways to move people on in their lives when they're positive, even if they are hesitant or unwilling to do so, without a little motivation. Then he had his nephew Lot, which he also did not separate from, whatever rationalization he had for that, which you can figure, family, take care of family, blah, blah, whatever. And finally, God brings in a situation where Lot, in association with Abraham, also became very wealthy, became a lot of livestock, etc. And together, their herds, their upkeep, and needs for vegetation, etc., was too much for the amount of livestock that they owned. And this drove them into separating, and that is when Lot showed his colors in regards to his life, and he picked the region of the Jordanian Valley, which is at that point in time very lush and beautiful and very prosperous, even though the scripture tells us they also had the reputation of being very, very evil, denoting the Sodomite population that inhabited at least the major cities. And that shows Lot's monetary greed, monetary reversionism in that regard. And once that separation occurs, now he has fulfilled the second aspect, the conditional clause of the covenant, not only from his father, but from his relatives. And after that occurs, in here in verses 14 through 18, and the Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him. See, after Lot separated from him. Something to consider. Wonder why you're not blessed in time. Maybe this is one of the areas that adjustments need to be made. But anyway, now lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward and southward and eastward and westward, for the land which you see, which is Canaan proper, I will give to you and to your descendants forever. Obviously, it's going to be a while before they actually occupy this real estate and make a nation out of it. But it's part of the covenant, part of the promise. And I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if anyone can number the dust of the earth, then your descendants can also be numbered. Arise and walk about the land through its length and breadth, for I will give it to you. So that makes it very clear that Abraham, as long as he stayed within the geographical confines of Canaan, was operating under God's geographical will for him. And he is free to move about. That's his niche. And he takes advantage of that. So I'm going to pack up and move. And Abraham moved his tent and came to dwell by the oaks of Mamre, which are in Hebron. There he built an altar to the Lord. So we see here that from his first incident, the famine incident, when he went into Egypt, there he clearly violated God's geographical will. He left Canaan. He looked to those outside of where the periphery where he is supposed to inhabit to provide for him, rather than God providing for him within the immediate periphery. So here he remains geographically oriented in regards to the covenant. And seven, his remaining in Canaan, if you will, is indicative to what we would consider to be his NPR, his most pressing responsibility. Obviously, it's in a different time. This is not the church age. This is early patriarchs of Israel in the age of the Gentiles, getting ready in a little while to transition into the age of Israel. But God still had geographical will for them. And it's what we refer to as NPR. God's geographical will for us is to be where sound Bible doctrine is being taught and to be there on a repetitive basis so that we can make the rebound maturity adjustment in regards to our lives. So understand, Old Testament saints had geographical NPR in regards to their lives. So 8, now the phrase from there, the Hebrew men sham, means he left Mamre, where he had relocated earlier, is one of his main haunts, if you will, where he liked to hang out. And we saw that he was there back in 18, verse 1. Now the Lord appeared to him by the oaks of Mamre, while he was sitting at the tent door at the heat of the day, which leads up to the whole event. The Sodom and Gomorrah, and brings us into our media context. 9. So here he first relocated his livestock and his estate, as seen by the verb settled, Yashab. Before then, he sojourned in Gerar. So the idea here is he found adequate pasture land to set up his business, to set up his estate with all of his livestock. This was going to be his main hang, at least for the temporary time. And then he goes off, basically, with whatever company, service, whatever he had, but his wife, obviously, is with him. And he's going to make another trip further north to Gerar. So the language makes it clear you have a major move, but then you have a side trip that he takes from that. 10. Now the land of the Negev was remote and provided the open spaces to feed his herds, and the area provided water for all. Again, that's starkly different from what you would find today in the environment in this particular area. Chapter 16, verse 7, we saw there in regards to Hagar. And she was fleeing from Sarah, that she stopped at the well that was there close to Shur. And this is a general area that Abraham has gone to between Kadesh and Shur. And the angel of the Lord found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, by the spring on the way to Shur. So it was a good place where they could have ample water. And the vegetation, obviously, was adequate to feed his livestock and keep them healthy. 11, he then takes a side trip to Gerar. That was a more populated area here, rather than being farmland. It is more suburban. And it was occupied by the Philistines. We know that, Genesis 26:21. Now there was a famine in the land. This is Isaac here in view. Besides the previous famine that occurred in the days of Abraham, so another famine occurs during the time of Isaac. So Isaac went to Gerar to Abimelech, king of the Philistines. Now we'll explain that. What's going on there is that centers on Isaac, and you seem to have the same person still around, even though Abraham's gone. We'll address that. It's in the term Abimelech. So there, that verse, for our intents and purposes now, recognizes that this area was inhabited by the Philistines. So 12, the Philistines were the descendants of Pathrusim and Casluhim, Pathrusim and Casluhim, which were the sons of Mitzrayim, which is Egypt. We know that, Genesis 10, back there. 13 and 14, and Mizraim became the father of Ludim and Anamim and Lahabim and Naphtuhim and Pathrusim and Casluhim, from which came the Philistines. So I didn't make any of that up, like I could have anyway. And Kaphtorim. They like those eems, I guess. But that's plural in the Hebrew. That ending. So, they were descendants of Mizraim, Egypt, from his kids. They eventually evolved into the Philistine race. Parts of them did. So 13, it was an area obviously destined for conquest under Joshua that recognizes that this is in the land of Canaan. And eventually, Israel will take over, conquer them as a people and take over their land. Joshua 13:2. Joshua is over, it's one in advance in years, and the Lord said to him, "You are old in advance in years, very much of the land remains to be possessed. This is the land that remains, all the regions of the Philistines and all those of the Geshurites," etc., etc. So eventually it would be inhabited by the Jews. So 14. Without the earlier Egyptian account now, back in chapter 12, verses 11 through 20. Verse 2 here would be cryptic, as the narrator hastens on to focus on Abimelech's dream and subsequent discussion with Abraham, following verses 1 and 2. He just goes immediately into this dream, rather than giving us any more details like he did back in Egypt. But just the fact that Abraham says, Sarah, his wife, is his sister, and Abimelech takes her, tells us you have a parallel situation occurring on our present event from the Egyptian event. So otherwise, the verse would be somewhat cryptic if we didn't have the previous verses to draw upon to know what's going on. So 15, Abraham resorts to his human viewpoint scheme here, presenting Sarah, his wife, as his sister, a koth in the Hebrew, in fear for his life while in Gerar, just as when in Egypt. His situation in Egypt tells us there what brings this about in Abraham's misfire, and that is based on fear of the inhabitants, the residents of these foreign countries that he's not familiar with. 12:13, he tells Sarah there, "Please say that you are my sister so that it may go well with me because of you, that I may live on account of you." Verse 12, it will come about when the Egyptians see you that they will say, "This is his wife," and they will kill me, but they will let you live. So this scheme, he concocts this scheme, and we find out in this situation he actually comes up with this scheme at the very get-go of his ministry with Sarah. So he again falls back on this human viewpoint, failure to faith rest. Abraham obviously had a fear grid. And you got to understand, fear is not necessarily you're afraid of everything. Certain things he wasn't afraid of. I mean, this is the same dude that took a handful of men and went and conquered the kings kidnapped his nephew Lot. So you put him in a situation like that, he knew no fear. But when it came to his wife, he had a whole different ball game. It was a whole different ball game for his STA. And via his wife, he conjectured in his mind, which could have been, obviously, had grounds for it, as it might have happened back in those days. Sarah, as we know, was very beautiful. And if you're a foreigner, you ran the risk of somebody knocking you off so that they could have your wife. See? So we see the same, but all of it is a failure to faith rest on Abraham's part. So we see the same scheme being employed here by Abraham. So 16, now while the verses remain silent as to what spurred his fear in this region, up in Gerar, it is not a stretch to consider that its inhabitants had quite a reputation as aggressive and warlike, putting Abraham on the defensive. These particular people, if listeners, number one, they tended to be genetically large people. Goliath, giants, come from the Philistine race. And when it came time to go in and conquer this particular race of people, the very presence of these people put the fear in those unwilling to faith rest in regards to the Jewish eyes. Exodus, get to the right book here, 13:17. Even before they meet the people, God reads our tapes. He knows every ounce of SCA, the inclination, trends that we have, fear, etc. And he took them the path that he took them when he led them out of Egypt. In part, as one of the more safer ways of travel without meeting people that otherwise might put fear in them, and they run and try to go back in this respect. And that's the reputation of these people up here in Philistia. Now it came about when Pharaoh had let the people go that God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines. Even though it was near, it would have been a shorter deal. You look on the map and you go, wow, yeah, he could have gone right across the north up by the Mediterranean and been up there. As the crow flies, it was a shorter route. For God said, this is God speaking, unless the people change their minds when they see war and they return to Egypt. These are people that you didn't want to mess with if you're a typical cosmic type. They were good warriors. They were brave. And they were bad, if you will. So, obviously, while the verses remain silent, you can see why Abraham might, once again, start worrying about the situation with Sarah, as he did in Egypt, because of the reputation of these people in general. But even then, as we will learn, reputation that precedes you may not always necessarily mean that's what you're going to get when you get there. Because when Abraham gets there, Abimelech is a totally different person than what one might expect that otherwise comes from a group of people, a race, that had this type of reputation. So 17, curiously, Abimelech now, as I said, we address the name here, is a Canaanite name. It would be a Canaanite inhabitant in regards to the language, by implication. And it means, my father is king, even though the territory was Philistine. 18, how do we resolve this? It is quite possible that Abimelech was the royal title rather than the personal name, since in the title of Psalm 34, we find it applied to the king of Gath, elsewhere known by his personal name. Abimelech, a generic title, if you will, like president or something of that nature. Psalm 34. Here's a Psalm of David when he feigned madness before Abimelech, a Philistine, who drove him away and he departed. And that particular Philistine is used here as a title for one named Achish, which means son of a king. Father of a king, son of a king. 1 Samuel 27, 2 and 3. So David arose and crossed over, he and the 600 men who were with him, to Achish, the son of Maoch, king of Gath. He's in the land of the Philistines. This is the same person referred to as Abimelech in Psalm 34. And David lived with Achish at Gath, he and his men east with his household, even David with his two wives, Ahinoam, the Jezreelitess, and Abigail, the Carmelitess, Nabal's widow. And here he's running from Saul. He goes to Philistine to do so. And the psalm then revolves around that situation. All right. 19, with this in mind, it is probably his son, also called Abimelech, that is a contemporary to Isaac in Genesis 26, 1 and following, that we read previously. This Abimelech is simply a title, which was handed down to his son, who became king, who would then be the contemporary with Isaac after Abraham. In Genesis 26, 1 and following. There were the famine in the land, besides the previous famine that had occurred in the days of Abraham. So Isaac went to Gerar, to Abimelech, king of the Philistines. And the Lord appeared to him and said, do not go down to Egypt, stay in the land of which I shall tell you. Surprise, surprise. Geographical will. Sojourn in this land, I will be with you and bless you, see. For to you and to your descendants I will give all these lands, etc., etc. And Isaac goes on. He goes to Gerar, verse 6 and verse 7. When the man of the place asks about his wife, he says, she is my sister. The acorn does not fall far from the tree. For he was afraid to say, my wife, thinking the men of the place might kill me on account of Rebekah, for she is beautiful. So, that would be how you would harmonize the reference to Abimelech in regards to association with Abraham and Isaac and David. 20, I'd note here, it is interesting to note that Isaac had his father's STA trend in a similar occurrence, recognizing the STA gene being passed down through the father, which is part of the doctrine of the STA. That we come to conclusion of, mostly with the pillar of the virgin birth recognizing that Jesus Christ came into this world spiritually alive without a sin nature. And that was because the Father was bypassed, the human Father was bypassed, and God impregnated supernaturally. His mother Mary, who produced a perfect ovum, perfect egg without an STA. Obviously, even though a female does that, if it's genetically coupled with DNA that has the STA, it becomes STA infected. So anybody else, obviously, would come into the world born with an STA. So that shows that the father is the transmitter of the STA. The woman, the female, is simply the carrier. And here, so children, you want to blame your dad for your malfeasance? Well, that's fine in regards to STA trends, but understand you're disobedient because you're a disobedient person. Not necessarily because it's your dad's trends. But if you see likeness between children and their father, and obviously the mother, you'll get the nuances of her in this thing because of the environment, etc. But it is the father that passes down the STA trend, the STA genes to their children. And then they obviously pass down the males in that regards. So that supports, if you will, that premise. 21. Abimelech is also now is used as the name of Gideon's son. Others had this name that would be attached to him as a formal name. And then it's also the name of an Israelite priest. Judges 8:31. Now Gideon had 70 sons who were his direct descendants. Busy. For he had many wives. And his concubine who was in Shechem also bore him a son, and he named him Abimelech. And then the Israelite priest, 1 Chronicles. And Zadok the son of Ahitub and Abimelech the son of Abiathar were priests, and Shaphshah was secretary. So 22, moving on here. Sarah's beauty obviously was still outstanding now at the age 90. She's 90 years old. Having been maintained and possibly, to whatever degree, rejuvenated via the miracle of restored sexual vigor after Yahweh's visit to her, the last visit. And we know that she is going to have a child now within the upcoming year. So that could obviously, if nothing else, give her more of a youthful appearance. But otherwise, she was just pretty. That's all there is to it. And pretty at an old age. Most of us think of 90. But not Abraham and Sarah. Not Abraham and Sarah. At 13, she obviously was not yet pregnant, but she was vulnerable. She would be in the state, is my conclusion, that in this situation, she's basically God's restored her vitality or virility, and she's fertile. Understand, you can be fertile, and God can still close your womb. She only had one kid. What happened after the fact? God closed her womb. People can still be normal. And God's hand is in everything. That's the point I'm making here. Even in those things that seem so natural, etc. It's why you should pray about everything if you want kids. You need to pray about that to begin with. But then, you pray about having a kid, see. So 24, like Pharaoh, 24 years earlier, we're looking at 1871 in the previous scenario. Now we are at 1847 B.C. Abimelech here is informed of Sarah's beauty, and he sends for her. The word's out. Good-looking lady here. She's not taken by anybody. And as any good king would do, we'll send her on up. It's good to be the king. So 26, here we have an occasion, or 25, he is smitten by her beauty and brings her into his harem. Now he obviously sees her, says, yeah, she'll do. And he sets it up, and he's going to be betrothed to her and marry her and make him one of his wives. So 26, now, in reflection over this, while overt beauty of one's wife is generally desired and considered an asset to the relationship, for Abraham's SCA trend, it becomes a liability. Under normal circumstances, that a wife is a knockout like Sarah or Rebecca. You know, people consider that to be an asset. Oh, wow, you're one lucky dude, see, as the human viewpoint would throw it at you. And it's generally just considered to be an asset. But on Abraham's part, it's a liability. And this just shows you the quirkiness, if you will, of the SCA. Is her beauty that in part is responsible for his fear in regards to his life, because everybody else is going to want her now. You know, faith rests. And that's point 27. This illustrates that the SCA refuses to be satiated and will find ways to compromise that considered good or normal otherwise. That's the SCA. It takes what is normal, what should make you happy, and it twists it around and it turns it into something that truly lessens the beauty and the value of the very thing that God is blessing you with. See, that's the SCA. It'll do that to you every time if you let it in that regards. All right, our time's up. We'll finish this up Tuesday. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to light these things in Jesus' name. Amen.